All right, people. It's Saturday. It's that time again. It's 9 o'clock p.m. Pacific Standard Time, of course. And I think it's about an 8-hour difference. Might be as many as 11, but we'll find out, James, when we bring him on right after the break. We got a commercial break here in just a few minutes. Where James had gone ahead and scheduled Peter Phillips from Project Censored for today's show, and we're trying to get him on the phone right now. Hopefully we will have him. He's been on this program before at least 2-3 times, and James has gone ahead and put in the effort to get him back on the program, and we're not sure if there's a technical difficulty so far, but we're working on that right now. Today is November 20th, 2010, and I'm in the midst of working on my quote-unquote appeal to the National Transportation Safety Board, which is kind of confusing in many ways. The National Transportation Safety Board is an independent agency, and it investigates airplane crashes, amongst other things. Airmen from the FAA, pilots, stewardesses, stewards, aircraft mechanics, and others. And I'm trying to find okay, now we're on to the guests on the way. So we have James Corbett is holding, and he'll be on air with us here in a moment, right after the break. This is Republic Broadcasting Network. This is In the Zone. I am Lieutenant Eric Schein, naval officer who's up for promotion, lieutenant commander in the United States Navy, in a reserve component known, I come out at Kings Point serving on special duty as a naval officer serving in special duty in the United States Merchant Marine. And in case of natural catastrophe or war, we are there stationed working as a civilian federal officer in the United States Merchant Marine. And if something happens, we become a liaison, the eyes and ears and the go-to guy or girl for the United States Navy for these important assets, international, like oil tankers, container ships, and more that ply the international rights of way, just like our railroads do here on land within the nation. These vessels do internationally to other countries, and in times of peace, they are just as important as they are in times of war. And that is why we have this very complex system that's been set up over, last several hundred years, that is and has been being taken down from within. But I want to get to Project Censored, and what I'm actually going to bring James on after the break, let him introduce Peter Phillips and Project Censored, although we've had him on here before, and do a quick bio for Peter, and have James also introduce himself and his site, CorbettReport.com, when we get back from the break. We'll probably put out the call-in number a little bit, maybe halfway in the show, depending on how it goes, but I'll put that out now. Write it down. You can call and be on the list. 800-313-9443. But we'll be right back with James Corbett and Peter Phillips from Project Censored. We're back, and this is Republic Broadcasting Network, the program In the Zone. I am host, Lieutenant Eric Schein, with my co-host, James Corbett, who has been co-hosting the program now for the last couple months, pretty close. And he put in the effort to get Peter Phillips back on the program. Peter Phillips from Project Censored has been on the program before, at least, I think, 2-3 times. But I'm going to go ahead and pass it over to James Corbett of the Corbett Report, CorbettReport.com, to introduce himself first and, you know, real briefly, and then go ahead and bring on Peter Phillips.
Well, thank you, as always, for having me on again today, Eric. It's great to be here with you. And as people might know by now, if they've been listening for the last couple months, I am James Corbett. I'm from CorbettReport.com, and it's a website that's tracking news and independent information from here in Japan, where I live. And I cover news and information from America and around the world from an alternative perspective. And that's exactly why we have Peter Phillips on the line today. And Peter Phillips is a professor of sociology at Sonoma State University and the former director of Project Censored. He teaches classes in media censorship, investigative sociology, sociology of power, political sociology, and sociology of media. And he has published 11 editions of Censored, Media Democracy in Action from Seven Stories Press. And also from Seven Stories Press is Impeach the President, The Case Against Bush and Cheney, and Project Censored Guide to Independent Media and Activism. He's well known, of course, for his affiliation with Project Censored and with other media censorship organizations. So, Peter Phillips, it's great to have you on the program. Are you here today?
Yes, James. Thanks for having me on. That's great.
Excellent. Yeah, well, it's great to have you on, and I'm here with my co-host, Lieutenant Eric Schein, and we'd love to hear a little bit more about yourself and your background and what you're up to these days.
Well, we just brought out the Censored 2011 book, and Mickey Huff is now the director of Project Censored. He's at Diablo Valley College. We have 30 affiliate universities now worldwide. We need one in Japan, so you got to help us out with that.
We've got that's a good
America,
idea, actually.
Germany, Spain, all over Canada and U.S. And these are the places that pick the, they do the research on the stories. We post those on our website at projectcensored.org under Media Freedom International. So these are validated news stories through a university. And so we're posting hundreds year round now. And then all the campuses vote on those each year, and they pick the 25, and that's what ends up in the book.
That's right, and I think that's probably what Project Censored is best known for. So tell us about this year's list.
Well, number one story is global plans to replace the dollar and the eventual collapse of the dollar in the world as a reserve currency. That will mean high inflation for people in the U.S., a weakening of the dollar, and continued reduction of standards of living for working people in the United States. The second story is the Defense Department's the worst polluter in the world. The third story is about Internet privacy and how Obama is actually increasing the spying on the Internet. The next one is the ICE operates secret detention centers around the U.S., gathering up to 390,000 people this year for deportation. And more drama about Blackwater. So it's quite a list.
That's exactly right. And I also understand number 14, increased tensions with unresolved 9/11 issues, recently got Project Censored into a little bit of controversy and, in fact, got Project Censored censored by one of the outlets that they're working with. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, the story number 14 is the unresolved issues, and that is the fact that the architects and engineers had, when we released this, 1,000 architects and engineers had signed for a new investigation, particularly on Building 7, which was a valid, you know, news story. Now it's up to 1,300. And, just of course last week, received the attention on Fox from Geraldo Rivera. So certainly a legitimate news story that hasn't been covered. Part of that was also how Osama bin Laden had been dead for several years. It was written by, it was actually in the Daily Mail in Great Britain, not here in the U.S. And that's the work of David Ray Griffin, of course, the professor, former professor at Claremont College of Theology. But then how the President Obama's appointee to the Office of Information Regulatory Affairs, Harvard Law professor Cass Sunstein, claims that the U.S. government should infiltrate and discredit activist groups like 9/11 groups. So he acknowledges the government's been involved in conspiracy in the past, but he doesn't believe that's a problem anymore. So we wrote about state crimes against democracy, which is a new kind of a new concept being used in public administration theory. And people who study public administration around, and Lance DeLaven Smith from Florida had written an article in Sage Publications, was an academic reviewed article about the patterns of state crimes against democracy, SCADs is what they're called, over, you know, since World War II, and there's a whole lot of them. And certainly Tonkin Gulf is one, and Watergate's another, and Iran-Contra. These were people inside of government conspire to do something illegal. So, and he lists a probable SCAD is Building 7. So we wrote an op-ed for the op-ed service that we had been writing for 6 years. I produced something like 60 op-eds. But the op-ed service had recently been taken over by Institute of Policy Studies in Washington, D.C. And the first op-ed we wrote for them last year was fine. It was about Higher Education America. It went out to all their papers. Second one we wrote talked about state crimes against democracy, and they flat said they weren't going to cover anything about 9/11. And we challenged that, and, you know, that, hey, there can't be topics that can't be covered in a free press, and we were told that we weren't invited back to ever write for them again.
That's absolutely incredible, yet not particularly surprising, I think. Lieutenant
Well, Fang, you know, on the left, we have seen resistance to 9/11. Possibly, I mean, there's some aspects of it where there's, you know, the 9/11 movement has people on all sides of the map. There's leftists, there's communists, there's libertarians, there's Republicans and Democrats. I mean, there's a large number of people, but and there's a core group of scholars. And we, of course, over the years have focused on the scholarly work and the validated news work from researchers on the major questions, and certainly Building 7 is one of those. So we were framing this in this idea that governments do lie and governments do commit crimes. And that was simply unacceptable to a Washington, D.C. liberal policy institute.
I don't know if you caught this, but recently Fox News' Geraldo Rivera actually covered this story on a segment and had the people from the BuildingWhat.org campaign gaining awareness of Building 7 on his program for one segment to talk about that, which I think
it was a seven-minute segment. It was pretty good.
Yeah,
they had a structural engineer. And I'm still thinking about how Fox is proceeding with this. There hasn't been any follow-up on it.
Actually, he did appear on Judge Andrew Napolitano's Fox program recently to talk about the controversy that segment generated, and he did step away from it a little bit to say that he didn't believe there was any government complicity, but he thought that this was an interesting story, so I don't know how those two positions
better
mesh.
Than him screaming and yelling at the 9/11 protesters a few years ago and
exactly.
calling them crazy and nutcases.
Exactly.
But
also Fox News recently, Judge Napolitano had Lieutenant Colonel Anthony Schaefer on, and he was part of the Able Danger team, which was another highly censored story to do with 9/11.
What did they cover in that? I didn't see that one. I know of him. I know about Able Danger, and I actually have his book.
Right, which was supposedly the Pentagon bought up the first printing in order to suppress that.
Right. I have the redacted edition, but on the Internet you can find the pieces that are missing.
So what
was covered in the show?
Basically, they got into how the Able Danger story was suppressed by Philip Zelikow and the 9/11 Commission, and they ended up saying that Lieutenant Schaefer actually said on air that it was the 9/11 Commission was a cover-up from top to bottom, and every single member of the commission had something that they were actively trying to cover up on that panel.
Yeah, well, Able Danger didn't really come out till a few years after in terms of us finding out about it. We wrote about it early on. I included it in research in the 9/11 Empire book on that David Ray Griffin and Peter Dale Scott put out, Intellectual Speak Out. It's a pretty curious circumstance. I have to think that evidence that Orion had may still exist, even though all the Pentagon stuff was deleted.
Yeah, I believe it was 2 or 3 terabytes of data that was deleted there.
Exactly. Yeah, it was a huge amount of data. Of course, they had linked, and they had follow-up on Mohammed Atta and some of the other people in his circle. Everybody they talked to for the prior year or so, all contact information and that, and so apparently somebody at the Pentagon didn't think that should become available.
Absolutely. And also Fox News, I think a few days before that segment, had another segment that was talking to people that had been interviewed for the 9/11 Commission and showing that their testimony and what they actually said on camera were completely different. And they were saying, well, I don't know why that was in the 9/11 Commission testimony records because I didn't say that. So they had another segment dealing with that. So I don't know what Fox News is doing, but they seem to be more on the ball than any other corporate media outlet regarding the 9/11
question. Well, it's curious. I mean, they may want to, you know, try to force Obama to deal with something along this line, to embarrass him. I don't know. It's curious.
Curious indeed. Well, tell us about the other groups that you're working with. I understand there's Media Democracy in Action and other groups associated with Project Censored. What is that?
Well, Project Censored is called we are under the auspices of a nonprofit corporation called Media Freedom Foundation. Now, if you look on our website, you'll see a link to Media Freedom Foundation. That's where we post the validated news from the colleges and universities all over the world.
All right, you hear the music. We're going to break. We're with Peter Phillips from Project Censored, James Corbett from the Corbett Report. This is In the Zone. We'll be right back after the break. All right, back. This is Republic Broadcasting Network, your program In the Zone. I'm with James Corbett, my co-host for this program. It is November the 20th, 2010, and we're speaking with them, Peter Phillips from Project Censored. And I want to throw out one thing before I throw it back to James, was to ask Peter if he has covered or done anything on the federal fusion centers. I have personal experience with them. I was tried for 4 days in the federal fusion center in Long Beach, but Jesse Ventura on his show Conspiracy Theory has also brought forth these federal fusion centers, and I didn't know if Peter had covered the story at all.
We've covered the ICE detention centers, the 187 private facilities that are used to hold people. We've certainly covered the detention centers being built around the world. We know private courts exist. When you say fusion center, tell me what you mean by that.
Well, there's 29, if I remember correctly, there's 29 federal fusion centers, and there's 54 state fusion centers. It's basically what they've done is taken the federal buildings and used them or created a fusion center there, rather than having the separation of powers, separation of duties, separation of facilities, separation of personnel. All these walls were broken down, you know, in the aftermath or using 9/11 as an excuse to do this,
right,
to where now the CIA, FBI, IRS, ICE, Coast Guard, you name it, Homeland Security, whatever, they're all in the same building. They don't have their own facilities. A lot of them are in these fusion centers, and they're using these fusion centers to actually, I think Jesse had pictures of a bunch of them on his program. I was in one myself up in Long Beach, in it's the Glenn Anderson Federal Building. It is now the quote unquote Federal Fusion Center. And when you go in there, you're, you know, frisked, and you go through security protocols as if you were going on an international flight. I mean, you know, these are public facilities, they're federal facilities, the same that they're doing for state facilities. To where to gain access to them, you have to go through a complete, you know, security pat down.
That sounds like federal buildings anyway. So the fusion center, I think that's what they are, as a matter of fact. So whether you got the federal building in San Francisco or anywhere else, that's undoubtedly all those agencies that you mentioned have offices there.
No, but this is a new term, and what they've done is they've tried to marry the resources, the personnel, even the duties to an extent. It's almost like what they've done for the fire departments and the police, like we have it here in Huntington Beach, to where they have a combined training and tactic and command center for all the different, like the police department, fire department, public works, etc., to where they're all basically fused together, to where whether it's an emergency or war or anything else, they would all come under the same command and control.
So Building 7 was a fusion center.
I believe Building 7 was, but I don't think at that time they were actually using the term.
The terminology, right. Yeah.
Right.
Well, it makes sense.
Building 7 was only for emergencies, right? I mean, in an emergency situation, it became the Operation Command Center.
Exactly. But then there were high security agencies in the building, too.
Yeah, they had CIA, FBI, you name it, in there, Treasury and more, in the building with their offices, right?
We haven't covered fusion centers per se. We certainly covered the consolidation and the formation of police state in the U.S., the elimination of civil liberties, the practicing for mass arrest through Operation Falcon, which is
right. But what you're talking about, what you covered, are actually extensions from, or what would be used, the fusion center would be used for, to where they have these extra constitutional military tribunals that they're carrying out within the fusion centers, and then this would be tied into the whole infrastructure of like the prison system, et cetera.
Correct. And certainly they're implementing that for undocumented people who are picked up in these dragnets through doing what they call DUI license checks that are funded all over the country now through Department of Transportation, Homeland Security. So in our local city up here in Petaluma, there were 18 of those last year. And hundreds of cars are confiscated from people who are unlicensed, and they end up in the county jail about 90 a month. Most of them never haven't committed any crimes, and then they're deported through ICE.
And we're paying for all that, too.
Of course we are. We're paying for it all. And ICE has these 187 holding centers all over the country that aren't normal jails. They have 300 county and city jails and private jails they contract with for holding people. We're talking about tens of thousands of people simultaneously around the country. They can fly them around in airplanes so that if a family's looking for them or lawyers try to help them, they don't know where they are. There's no real-time monitoring of where these people end up. They'd be in San Francisco one day and Alabama the next. And some of these holding facilities are really just warehouses, armed guarded warehouses where people are held in detention for, a day at a time in transit or somewhere else. There's no facilities. There's no, showers or beds. They're just rooms. And we know that these are all over the country as well.
And they're being used right now. I mean,
yeah.
And they're carrying on, like you allude to, and what I would use the term is administrative rendition internally.
Exactly. It's certainly not due process.
Right. We'll be right back with Peter Phillips from Project Censored with James Corbett of the Corbett Report. This is In the Zone, Republic Broadcasting Network, 800-313-9443. We'll be right back after this commercial break.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.
All right, we're back. And I just typed in the search term Federal Fusion Center, and it pulls up a Justice Department, U.S. Department of Justice, Office of Justice Programs, Justice Information Sharing. It's an official, it's a DOD... or not DOD, but a .gov website, and I'll just read this real briefly. As part of the U.S. Department of Justice's DOJ Global Justice Information Sharing Initiatives, Global, efforts to develop Fusion Center guidelines, the Criminal Intelligence Coordinating Council, CICC, in support of the Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, Office of Justice Program, OJP, recommended the creation of the Fusion Center Focus Group. This focus group was tasked with recommending guidelines to aid in the development and operation of fusion centers. Concurrently, the Homeland Security Advisory Council, HSAC, Intelligence and Information Sharing Working Group, focused on developing guidelines for local and state agencies in relation to the collection, analysis, and dissemination of terrorism-related intelligence in the context of fusion centers. The recommendation resulting from HSAC's efforts assisted in the development of the fusion center guidelines.
And exactly. It goes on. Right. And I think... Well, I think the underlying issue here is the fact that these different departments and agencies are the walls that have been set up between them are being broken down in the name, of course, of this global war on terrorism, which allows these different departments and agencies to merge their functions and their intelligence sharing operations under cover of this war on terrorism, and allows them to effectively start to implement the homeland security, which is further militarization of the police and all of the policing functions. And I think an extension of that is Lieutenant Shine's case. Peter Phillips, I don't know if you're aware of Lieutenant Shine's case, but as he mentioned, he was tried in one of the federal fusion centers for 4 days. And he's a merchant marine who's being tried as an alleged civilian by the U.S. Coast Guard.
I'm also a naval officer. I went to a United States Federal Military Service Academy with a congressional appointment, and I served coming out of there as a naval officer serving on special duty in the Merchant Marine, and it's the Navy who basically has command and control of my academy. I had to get a Defense Investigative Services background check through Navy DOD to get into the academy, and it's the Naval Sciences Department that runs the academy, but go ahead.
Right, and this is an Article 32 proceeding, i.e. a military tribunal. The Coast Guard, as an alleged branch of the military, which is supposedly somehow also a civil federal service agency, which is in charge of maritime policing action, and is also declaring itself to be a special branch of the U.S. military that is alone able to operate outside the Department of the Defense in the Department of Homeland Security, and also police civilians, which gets it to...
But do it under Title 10 in the UCMJ, which is military law that's supposed to be confined to DOD.
Exactly.
But
right.
Somehow they've taken that and moved it out of the DOD and moved it into Homeland Security, which is martial law. It's military.
Exactly. So they are deploying military assets on American civilians now, which is, of course, absolutely a breach of UCMJ. And this is a huge issue. And I wrote an article about it recently that got some coverage called Whistleblower Coast Guard Implementing Martial Law. Peter Phillips, are you familiar with these issues and some of the...
Of course. I mean, that's what the Central American Command is about. So you've got, you know, division strength troops available to occupy any city in the United States in cooperation with Homeland Security and the Coast Guard and the Navy and anybody else. So we've been tightening up that. Posse Comitatus is gone. Habeas corpus is gone. So we're basically walking around, you know, day to day at the whim of the U.S. government legal apparatus that could pick any of us up any time.
Well, it's really the U.S. military.
We've been talking about that for 10 years. It's all happened since 9/11, certainly more rapidly and more consolidated, let alone the building of, you know, detention centers and increased capabilities of monitoring everybody in the country and on the planet. And a lot of this is private. So Northrop Grumman and Lockheed Martin are doing data mining on all of us.
Lockheed Martin is one, and I've noticed too that you have it in one of your stories, is Lockheed Martin, Admiral Loy, who was a Coast Guard Commandant, he helped set up the regulations, much like Michael Chertoff did with Homeland Security for the scanners. And then he goes to work for the company that does the scanners, Michael Chertoff did. But Admiral Loy, who was the Coast Guard Commandant, set up the regulations for the TWIC card, the Transportation Worker Identification Card. It's a biometric ID card that is the precursor to a new national ID that is owned and controlled and operated by Lockheed Martin, a military federal contractor.
Yeah, one of the biggest. And
yeah.
Well, national ID proposals have been around since the bombing in Oklahoma City, because the Terrorist Act at that point had a national ID card funding for any state that was willing to build the systems and use their driver's license. So the swipes on the back of a driver's license are set up to have the biometric identification for everybody. And they're certainly been moving in that direction for over 15 years.
Well, it's kind of... trying to choose my words here closely, I guess ominous would be the best one I can come up with. But the Coast Guard has tried to connect me to Timothy McVeigh in this military tribunal, an Article 32 proceeding, where they're saying I'm not a naval officer, I don't have the right to counsel, they're using JAG counsel, Coast Guard JAG counsel, to prosecute me, but they tried to somehow connect me to Timothy McVeigh in these proceedings. And I have absolutely no... I don't know him. I mentioned his name in a whistleblower letter to the Secretary of Transportation, and they've tried to somehow use that to develop some kind of tie or connection between me and Timothy McVeigh.
And then to put out a be on the lookout for you because of that alleged connection.
Right.
Yeah, that's why I've talked about this before. I mean, I've known about these issues with you for quite a while.
Right. And that's why people don't understand that we're not headed towards martial law. We're already there.
Yeah, well, the laws are in place. We still get to go shopping. In the Weimar Republic, you can still go shopping. You still go out to dinner. But the laws are in place, and we're implementing them on the undocumented first in
yep.
some real way. And, you know, the practice for mass arrest has been occurring since 2005, where 900-plus agencies all are simultaneously mobilized under the Justice Department, Homeland Security, to go out and simultaneously arrest 10,000 people. Now, these are supposedly people with felony warrants, but they could be any list of people. So, you
That's
know,
right.
the practice
kind
of the national coordination of our local police under Homeland Security, funded, you know, by Department of Transportation to these license checks, is a further extension of airline checks. It violates, you know, our Fourth Amendment and, you know, and of citizens, but we tolerate this. We tolerate going through airports. Now they're raising the level, and now you have to get patted down in your genitals. And we're supposed to accept this now, all under the name of fighting terrorism worldwide because of Osama bin Laden, who's dead. So it's like,
right.
Let's stop it.
Well, but even the pat-down procedure, that is to sell the machines. They're doing this to force people to use the scanners instead and basically have Chertoff and his company and all those who are behind this make a lot of money off of selling these machines worldwide.
They're trying to, I mean, whether they're stopping you on the street for no reason, asking you, I mean, I went through one of those with my parents, my 80-year-old parents, in Lodi, California, you know, a month ago, where we had to go get funneled into a one-lane thing. There's cops everywhere, flashing red lights, big trucks and all kinds of stuff. And they said, get out your license, get out, they're yelling at you. And then the guy takes my license and he looks at me, where have you been tonight? You know, I felt like this was the Gestapo, you know, this was, you know, in 1930s, and we had to produce our ID and explain what we were doing out in the evening.
And, yeah, like,
And we tolerated at airports. Now we're going to have them privately search us, and it's going to escalate. You know, there'll be cameras everywhere like they are in Great Britain. And officers are believing that they're above the law. They can literally do whatever they want. Not all officers, but certainly there's an attitude out there. Every time you walk through an airport, you know, anybody looks at those guys weirdly and they're yelling at you.
I was going to say, like in Aaron Russo's movie, Freedom to Fascism, America, Freedom to Fascism, he brings up some of those key points that you just raised yourself right now.
Sure.
And this has been a process that's been unfolding for years, as we know. And I think Project Censored covered it was the National Security Presidential Directive 51 a few years ago, which gave the president the power to basically implement any emergency procedures he wants in the event of any self-declared national emergency.
Self-declared
and as
national
we know,
emergency, suspend the internet, declare
exactly.
martial law.
Yep. There's been a declared national emergency since 9/11. Every single year, the administration has renewed the original declaration.
Well,
they keep
the laws intact, so they don't have to jilly around with Congress if the shit starts to hit the fan. And invariably, I mean, if you look at our story number one, and the collapse of the dollar, you know, in the global market is no longer reserved.
Right.
We're going to see increased inflation here in the U.S. It could be very rapid inflation. Certainly the cost of living for people who are on the borderline, the bottom 100 million people who have a zero net worth and live paycheck to paycheck or unemployment check to unemployment check.
And that's a big...
They won't have enough money to buy food.
Yeah, that's a big push
point.
Over the
when
edge.
We'll see the inner cities get occupied first because that's going to be the place that's hardest hit. There'll be civil unrest and, you know, we can see, you know, it could easily move in the direction of a fascist state.
I think we're already there. It's just that, like you bring up the tipping point of to where it's going to go into full blown, where everybody realizes it, and it's not just the intellectuals or those who are more aware, well-read, like yourself, James, myself, and others, everybody's going to realize, and they're going to be turning in their neighbors. They're going to be doing whatever they have to do to stay alive and survive.
I don't agree with that. I think that the 80% of us in the country who work for a living, who only have 6% of the financial wealth, and half the financial wealth is in the top 1%, and then the other 40-some percent is in the 19%, that 80% of us, we have a common issue, and that's wealth concentration and control by corporations. We're talking about a new corporate feudalism in the world. And this isn't just,
yep.
I mean, you call up to get tech support on your computer, you're talking to somebody in India. So this isn't about just the U.S., this is about working people worldwide. And the democracy movements are emerging. It's certainly happening in South America. We're seeing great resistance in Europe.
There needs to be
global-wide, democracy movements. Universities are engaged in talking. And young people here in this country, and I talk to a lot of them, they know that they're getting cheated. And they know that one out of three people in the country working at a Walmart wage, and unemployment, instead of, it's not just 10%, it's really 20%. And that the wages have been going down for 40 years, and the rich have been getting richer. So we can't tolerate that. I mean, but we're gonna have to get the Tea Party and the radical left recognizing that we have a common enemy of wealth and concentration and the corporate power structure in the world. And that is now global, in that the U.S. military, NATO empire, the industrial media empire of the world, with 1,000 bases all over the world, and the U.S. at the center of it, spending more on military than the rest of the world, has got to be stopped.
And I personally think the media, part of that industrial media complex, is the linchpin, because I think the media, the establishment corporate media, is able to basically convince people that there are all of these other various boogeymen or topics that need attention. And I think that's the key point. And that's why Project Censored and other such projects it's so important to focusing
like
the debate on what's really important.
Yeah, they treat us like mushrooms. Corporate media treats the American public like mushrooms. They really don't want you to know anything. Mushrooms are raised in the dark, and they're fed a lot of manure. So we get, television news, and television in general is simply entertainment. And it's not designed to inform us about what the powerful are doing. And that's what Project Censored has been saying for 35 years. Only it's gotten worse. There is a truth emergency in the world. A serious truth emergency.
Peter, do you see any light at the end of the tunnel? Do you see any... you're talking to a lot of young people. Do you see people?
But we're trying. We've got, university affiliates all over the world now finding independent news stories. The internet is filled with independent news. The problem is a lot of people don't know what to trust. But if you get universities validating independent news stories, we can start to learn that, raw story is pretty good most of the time. Huffington Post has some good stuff. And even the Colbert Report, you've got some good stuff on there. The Bilderbergers are real. The Trilateral Commission is real. And, the more we can recognize from a populist perspective on both the right and the left, and not be blaming immigrants for the loss of jobs, but blame the corporate power structures in the world for creating the joblessness that they hold and maintain.
Well, and even to break down the borders for themselves, erect them even higher for us, and
exactly.
Then carry on this program of human arbitrage, basically.
When I say corporate feudalism, I mean it. We're going back to a feudal control, and that the peasants, in Michael Moore's movie, when a bank or a big corporation take out a life insurance policy on their own people, and they hope that someone will die, and they do, and so they make money, then they call them dead peasants.
They put the money right in their own pocket. It doesn't go to the family
exactly.
or the beneficiaries. Yeah.
No.
They write themselves
the beneficiaries.
Yeah, the U.S. military is doing that. They're doing that with Indian tribes. DeLay and Abramoff were involved in that. They've nailed women up here in L.A. for doing that to homeless people. I mean, I guess I go back.
Capitalism is defunct. They've accumulated more capital than they know what to do with. Now they're just playing games of roulette with trying to get bubbles to get created. We saw that with a housing bubble. And there's land speculation and buying all over Africa now. It's happening all over the world. You know, they're trying to build, keep the stock market up by artificially inflating it, creating $600 billion 2 weeks ago to buy treasury bonds with. You know, it just undermines all of us. And it's a gambling casino on Wall Street. And Goldman Sachs is just coming out like roses, and they're really in charge. They're in charge of the Treasury, and they're in charge of the central banks and the Fed. And Obama just totally goes along with it.
Yeah, I was going to say, all that is required for evil men or women to succeed is that good men do nothing. And, you know, we've got a lot of people. There's people like you and James and myself and others who are doing everything that they possibly can, hanging by a thread, you know, to a lot of people. But then there's a lot of people that are just watching and waiting and keeping silent and figuring that if they put their head in the sand, they'll be safer somehow. And that's just simply not the case.
That's typical of any social movements and revolutionary action. I mean, during the revolution of this country, 10% of the people backed Washington actively. 10% of the people backed the British. Everybody else sort of sat around and waited to see which way it was going to go. So 10%, 30 million Americans in this country were doing nonviolent social non-cooperation or went on a shopping boycott from corporations, we could really have an impact.
I agree. We'll be right back with Peter Phillips from Project Censored and James Corbett, the Corbett Report, and maybe we'll try to sneak in a call or two here if we can. 800-313-9443. We'll be right back. All right, I'm going to throw it back to James, who will throw it back to Peter, and we'll take a call. But I want to thank Peter for coming on and for his efforts. And hopefully, maybe, he'll chime in and have his people cover something on the Coast Guard and Homeland Security down the road.
Right, and on that note, I will send a link to my article over to Peter and to Project Censored. Maybe they can check it out. But it is such an important issue, I think, and we have to keep pressing on this because it's only going to keep moving forward, unfortunately. But why don't we go to the calls? Let's go to Leo, and he's been holding patiently. Leo, do you have a question for Peter Phillips?
Yes, thank you. I'm finally glad to meet you on the telephone. I used to be on your list a long time ago. I think what we really need is a dumbed-down version of a new Declaration of Independence against the New World Order, and break it down into 10 basic areas, and then what we can do as individuals to unseat these people. Because I think people, they know there's something wrong, but they haven't got a clue as to how to go about it.
Peter, what's your thought on that type of idea?
Well, yeah, I think we need to lay out some thoughts about where we're going. And when it comes to social movements, and that's what it's going to take, as a very democratic, wide-open social movement, fully transparent, fully open, this is where we're going, trying to build the calling for democracy in the world, meaning, you know, grassroots decision-making, the lowest possible level.
Well,
and that starts in communities. It starts with contingency groups or people, your friends, building spokespeople that have agendas, and trying to stay out of feeling angry and hateful and hatred towards other people, and just really saying this is what we want, this is what we want, this is what we need. Putting together a statement of independence against corporate power, I think that's a good idea. Certainly, some people have been doing that.
Well, I think the concept of the New World Order, whether or not you include the British, Israelites, and the Vatican involved is not necessary. Just the New World Order will speak for itself. But I think people know it, and they see it, and they don't know what to do about it. And I'm looking for a manifesto where you can get lots of people to sign on, like, you know, like Catherine Austin Fitz and Max Kaiser and you. And you know, I would like to see a bunch of people in the Patriot Progressive Movement to sign on, and that way it'll give it. I mean, I remember how in the 60s we had all these marches and everybody joined in with their zillion coalitions. You know, it was a zillion coalition march, and that's why we were kind of unstoppable.
All right, well, we're running out of time here, but Peter Phillips, what do you think about the idea of reconstructing that sort of social movement that was happening in the 60s?
Well, we're against the war. And then it was environmental movement, then it was women's movement. I mean, all of those were important things to happen. And it was preceded by a labor movement, civil rights movement. Every one of those made major changes in American society. But we're at a level now where corporate power is so strong in the world, the military is so strong, that it's going to take some really strong revolutionary social movements of nonviolent cooperation. We can't fight them. Start blowing up things. Then we'll have a massive death and destruction. But certainly we need to find ways of resisting. And if that simply means for most Americans simply not shopping in a corporate store, then so be it. And living regionally and finding a new democracy from the bottom up and media from the bottom up that tells us the truth.
All right. Leo, thank you for the call. We're just about out of time. But Peter Phillips, why don't you tell people again how they can access your work and Project Censored?
Well, our projectcensored.org is the address on the web. We have all our stories up there. We have daily postings from under Media Freedom Foundation, which is validated news from colleges and universities. We have our daily news site, which is independent RSS feeds from News We Trust worldwide. More news there than in the New York Times. And then we have news stories in Spanish, Proyecto Censurado, and then we have our daily censored blog. So we're getting about a quarter million unique views a month and millions of hits. So join in, sign up on our point, our Facebook, and keep in touch.
Okay, excellent. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Peter Phillips, thank you for joining us tonight. And Lieutenant Eric Schein, as always, thank you.
James, okay. Real quick.
OrbitReport.com, and of course, everyone should check out MartialLaw911.com.
And CrossingTheRubicon.org.